some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, October 4th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. I'm joined tonight by Tony Forder, editor of Ale Street News. How are you, Tony?
Pretty good. Thanks, Jimmy.
Tony, it's always a pleasure having you on the air.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be here if I got to make the race across town from New Jersey.
You're a good one. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com, and our supporter, GoodBeerSeal.com. So, Tony, what happened this week? There was a big beer event somewhere in America.
Somewhere in America. Out in the Rocky Mountain High area. The 30th annual Great American Beer Festival, as a matter of fact, and we've been taking a group out there for more than half of those years. I think this is our 17th annual. So we do ferry the beer lovers. We had a couple of dozen on the trip this year. And that festival just seems to get bitter, and I mean, not bitter, but better every year, with just more layers added all the time.
Any new breweries that you got to try?
Yeah, a number of them, actually. I think some of the stats say there were, in terms of the competition they run out there, I think they had about 40-something new breweries that entered the competition. There were almost 4,000 entries into the medal competition. And 2,400 of those beers are poured on the floor.
So that is that a record?
Yep, that is a record. It seems to go up every year, but they don't expand the number of people or attendees, so they keep it manageable as far as getting around to taste the beers. The event did sell out in 1 week this year.
You know, we also have Paul, I can't pronounce your last name. Please do.
DeLugo Kinski.
Paul is he's got Blind Bat Brewery in Long Island.
Yeah, out in Centerport.
One of the smaller breweries in America right now. So you're a commercial brewery,
mm-hmm.
but you're still kind of just self-distributing.
Self-distributing, and also it's part-time. I have a so-called regular job during the week in an office where I sit in front of a computer, and then on mornings, evenings, weekends, I'm working in the little brewery, which is what used to be the garage behind my house.
So you're living the dream.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've talked to you about it before, how you got started. It's pretty awesome. But do you do anything like submitting your beers to GABF or any other competitions?
I haven't as yet, but hopefully 2012 might be a little different. I'm looking to quit the day job and expand and do it full time. So then I'd like to do that.
I think it's amazing that you have a license. It's a commercial brewery,
mm-hmm.
but it's in your garage. How did you pull that off?
A very, very fortunate combination of factors. The TTB, the federal agency that licenses breweries, they frown on so-called home breweries. But if your garage or building that you're going to use is separate from the house, they are pretty much okay with that. And I'm fortunate it's an old house that we have, and the garage was already separate. So I lucked out there. I lucked out with the local zoning. I'm very fortunate to be able to do it the way I'm doing it.
Well, Tony, have you tried any of the Blind Bat beers before?
I have not had the pleasure yet, I don't believe.
Let's try some of your beers, Paul.
Okay.
I've had a few, and I always like them.
All right. Thank
the
you.
One thing that's frustrating is that I can never get them.
All right. Well, again, you know, doing it part-time and self-distributing, I don't get into the city as much as I'd like to. Again, 2012, I'm hoping that'll be a different story. So I brought two beers here today. The first one open is the Honey and Basil Ale, which I think you had there at Jimmy's Number 43.
Yeah, you had it. We had a Nano Brewery dinner. We
yes.
had you and Barrier and a couple other guys.
Barrier
yeah,
brought some
good.
Great stuff and Pretty Things, I think, brought some things. And
Wandering Star,
Massachusetts. Wandering Star. They brought a really nice wit, if I recall.
Last year, one of your more popular limited selections was a Potato Stout.
Potato Stout, which I'll be doing again when the local organic potato harvest is in, which actually my wife is growing some for the brewery, and so she's actually going to be harvesting those pretty soon. So I need about 55 pounds of potatoes, which I peel and then cut up and boil like normal mashed potatoes. Add that to the mash of grains with a lot of rice hulls, and that adds extra dryness to an otherwise dry stout.
Tony, have you ever heard of a potato stout before?
Not a potato stout, but I have had potato ale before.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed one from the Great Canadian Beer Festival this year. That was memorable. But what sort of batch size are you brewing?
I'm now brewing 3 barrels, 93 gallons. Okay. I started when I first got licensed in 2008 with a small 10-gallon system, the old mm-hmm. Sabco Brew Magic, mm-hmm. just to see if people were, you know, receptive to what I was doing. So, and last year I got the larger system.
And how often are you brewing?
Only a couple times a month, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. I only have the 2 fermenters. I have another fermenter on the way on order. That's all I can squeeze in the current space. So looking at someplace else, another either industrial space or ideally we're actually looking at some possible farmland so we can keep it all the spent grains, which my wife uses for composting and mulching. We have a friend who raises pasture chickens for eggs, and they get some of the grains. So and the whole thing there on the farm will be a little more sustainable.
Right. All right, man. Well, the new system that you bought, are you going to be able to keep that and expand your production?
Yeah, I could move that and add more fermenters and then maybe eventually get a larger system, depending on how the business goes, let it grow organically.
I was at Eataly today. I ran into Brooks Coretta, who's the brewer there, the young brewer. He'd been on our show, and he was with Leonard de Above, if I pronounce the name correctly, from Del Borgo. He just came back from GABF as well. So there's a lot of stuff. But they have the same size system. They have like a 3 or 3.5 barrel system. Have you been over there and checked it out?
Not as yet. That's on my to-do list, but I don't get out as much as I used to.
I mean, they're different. I mean, they're blessed. They said basically all the beer they make, they sell, and they can barely keep up with, the people that come over there.
Right.
Let me ask you, for a small nano, what are your goals in terms of distribution? Are you just trying to get on in a few bars? You're not bottling, are you?
I'm doing some bottling, okay. Some kegging. There's a farmer's market every week, one town over in Northport that I'm at, and that's been fun because, dealing with people who come every week and they talk about the beer they had the previous week. Then I'm in a few bars and beer stores out on Long Island, Sapsuckers out in Huntington, which is a really nice beer bar. Dave's Bellport Beer and Soda out in Bellport, further east. He's been a real big booster of local Long Island craft beer scene, which is growing.
All right, Tony. Any particular beers that jump out at you from the GABF?
There were quite a few. What I'd like to do, Jimmy, if possible, is just to give you guys a little flavor of how our trip goes. And this was a little preview that I had written in my editorial in the current issue of October, November issue, which we managed to get out before the GABF, and we did put the 30th GABF on the cover. The GABF represents an annual pilgrimage for both craft beer purveyors and beer lovers. There's nothing like that first sniff of mountain air, the crisp taste of that first beer. We usually hit the ground running, our bus grabbing us at the airport and whisking us away to our first chosen brew pub. Then check in at the hotel and off to the opening session of the fest, Thursday evening, humping boxes of L Street News to be distributed. Walking into the hallowed hall, a moment of silence as we see Michael Jackson's visage beaming down from the rafters. Reflecting, too, on the loss of our friend and beer purveyor par excellence, Richie Stolarz, whom we lost to a fatal heart attack in this city 11 years ago. Then, as they were wont us to do, we taste. Our progress punctuated by dozens of faces and reunion as the evening wears on. At some point comes the realization of happiness, the beer, the friends, the camaraderie. So that's usually like the first night.
Brilliant. All right, so you're having a good time. I mean, everyone talks about GABF, and I love some of the local festivals too. Cooperstown's really great, Omegang. What is it about going to a festival that's, everyone in the world goes to?
Well, I think for us, it is a lot of reunions. You see all these faces of brewers that you know. This year, they actually had a 30th anniversary dinner on the Saturday night, which I was lucky enough to be invited to. And I think it was only 100 people, but some of the people that were at the first ever Great American in 1982, I think there were 30 breweries represented. It's that, and for our group, we had 24 people this year, only 4 newcomers, so the rest of them will repeat it. So it's very bonding. It's like a family reunion almost as well. And I think as well as, some of the new winners of the medals, it's always interesting to see that the, you know, solid beers seem to win, you know, year in, year out. Trogs, Trojanator was one of those. Smutty Nose won for their wheat wine ale again. Weyerbacher won in the specialty honey beer category with 16, the anniversary beer. I'm sorry to say there were not a lot of New York City beers that were in the medal category this year, but really, with just over 200 medals awarded out of 4,000 entries, you know, it's a bit of a crapshoot.
All right. And we also have a special guest tonight, too. We've got Tim, is it Besecker?
Besecker.
And Tim's here from PrivateTap.com, and he's going to be running a special Twitter tasting. In fact, right now, tell us what's going on.
Yeah, well, basically, Jimmy, thanks for having me. You know, online right now, we have tons of people that were able to get the Cigar City beers in Pennsylvania, New York, in Florida. They got the beers. They're online. They're on Twitter. They're following along. And, you know, we're going to discuss the beers, just have a general back and forth, you know, input, and just kind of get the community together that isn't geographically close to each other. But, you know, because of social media and the Internet, we're able to do that. So
what's the Twitter tag that we should all be?
It's hashtag beer sessions.
OK. And also for us to maybe still, we also have @beer_sessions.
Sessions, yep.
So hashtag.
Definitely follow @beer_sessions. My Twitter handle is @TimBesecker. But to follow along in the chat, just search for #beersessions.
That sounds good. All right. Well, cool. Let's go back to Blind Back because you're really doing something cool. Tony, what do you think about his beer? It's the honey and basil. I mean, to me, it's basil. I smell the basil leaf.
On the finish, yeah. Yeah, I use I start with an English malt bill, English yeast, and but I added for the 93-gallon batch, 60 pounds of honey from the Catskills. I'm sorry,
Open the other one.
Oh, open the other one. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then basil from a local farm just at the end, just to help kind of balance things out.
Well, it seems to me it's very subtly done. You know, it's not overly sweet for a honey beer.
Right, yeah.
Which is nice, fermented out nicely. And, yeah, the basil is there, but it doesn't really overpower you. It just gives it a twang at the end there, yeah.
So when do you put it in?
The basil's last 15 minutes of the boil.
Of the boil.
Yeah. And just chop up some basil and it goes.
I've had it on draft. How are your beers different in draft than in bottle?
That's a good question.
I mean, are you bottling yourself?
Or? Yeah.
It's the same batch?
It's the same batch, yeah. It's I put some into the regular, you know, commercial kegs, and some go into the old homebrewer corny kegs, and I bottle out of the corny kegs. So just the old Blechman beer gun, one at a time.
It was just last year that Sam Merritt from Civilization of Beer was putting together a little nano brewery dinner for New York Craft Beer Week, and your name came up, and... I still can't believe that you can make beer in your garage and sell it. I mean, there's so many guys on the verge of that. You hear about people that are, you know, home brewers, and they're hoping to get investors. And, you know, I love what you're – to me, that's what beer should be. I mean, you get you and Barrier when you guys are starting real small and working your way up, paying your dues.
Yeah. You know? That's you know, and you get to do what you love. You know, it's – I mean, for me, it's like, you know, for fly fishing for other people, I'd rather be brewing than anything else. So, and this is what you're drinking now is the Belfry Brown. I use seven different malts, and I added some grade B maple syrup at the after primary fermentation into the conical fermenter.
Tim, what do you think of the Blind Bat beers?
The first one was very good. Heavy on the basil, I like that, and the honey definitely came through in the finish. Always a fan of using local honey.
Yes, yeah, that was from this batch was from the Catskills. The first batch was a local beekeeper right in Huntington, one town over.
Excellent.
So, Tim, you're twittering away, but you're really quite a blogger. I mean, you've got a good following. Do you feel like you have more of a following through Twitter or through blogs?
Twitter, definitely. Blogging, I do a little bit, sort of on the side. I'm more focused on Twitter, Google+, those outlets, getting people together in those areas. Yeah.
All right. Tony, do you use any new media? You have Ale Street News.
Yeah,
it's great. It's a magazine. I love to pick it up. I love to read it.
I'm just a newcomer to the iPhone, so I'm getting there.
Love the magazine, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we do have Facebook, and we are dabbling into the social media area, and that's one of the reasons I got on board with the iPhone. So far, so good. I need to, you know, work on my apps a little bit, but we're getting there. We're kind of old school at L Street News, but we realize the direction things are going right now. So we do have help.
But you are online too.
Oh yeah, we have a pretty extensive website. We have a boutique there. We can buy t-shirts, that kind of thing. And
what's the website for L Street News?
It's lstreetnewsonline.com.
But do you update? Do you just post what's in your magazine, or do you update the news stories as well?
No, we do update. The magazine comes out every 2 months, and more often than not, these days we have overflow from the magazine that goes. We may run a shorter version of a piece in the newspaper, and then put the longer version on the website. And we have a number of, I mean, you call them bloggers, on the website, but we kind of have print bloggers. I mean, they only have, it comes out once every 2 months, but we have a number of different columnists, and if we can't fit them all in, we do put them on the website, and then we do update, news throughout the period, and we do send out e-blasts as well.
And you have more than what your Illustrated News is, what, like the East Coast, Northeast?
We can actually call it national now. We started in the Northeast hub, and then we extended, the Eastern Seaboard, but now we do support distribution to the important places around the country.
And how do you feel like with guys like, other online blogs? There's a lot of bloggers, and then there's like the larger, well-known sites like a Beer Advocate. How do you feel like you guys are positioned?
Well, I think we're kind of like a bit like the granddaddy, because we had the newspaper coming out first. I think there's definitely still a place for the print. People still like to hold, the magazine. We tell people to keep it in the bathroom. You can't read it all in one sitting, we hope. But for people, that want to stay in constant touch, obviously, blogging, tweeting is very popular. And then, of course, the sites like Beer Advocate became popular with basically beer enthusiasts that wanted to express their own opinion, So I think there's a place for
everything. So we should keep getting the print magazines and keep them in the bathroom.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the best place to read them.
It comes in handy. But, hey, we got something neat coming up. We're going to be back in a few minutes. We're going to have Cigar City on. And with Tim, we're going to be talking with some of our Twitter listeners on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. All right.
If the sun refuses to shine, I don't mind. If the mountains fell in the sea, let it be. Turned out to be nine.
White collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. They're hoping soon my kind of drop and die, but I'm gonna wave my free flag.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's sponsored by greatbrewers.com and supported by thegoodbeerseal.com. I'm here with Tony Forder from Ale Street News on Beer Sessions Radio.
Hi there again.
Hey, guys. So we got Joey Redner and Wayne Wambles from Cigar City on the line. Are you guys on?
Yeah, we're here.
All right.
This is Joey.
Hey, Joey.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. And Wayne, you're on too?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, first, thanks for participating in this. It's our first live Twitter tasting. With Tim here, we've got at least how many people are around the country tasting your beers right now?
I would guesstimate anywhere from 20 to 30. We got some people in Florida, some people in Pennsylvania and New York that were able to get the beers due to distro. And other people participating, just interested in the brewery. And
Tim, why don't you read off a couple of the Twitter handles so we can shout out to who's on today.
Just at the top of the list, I mean, you know, things are coming through pretty rapidly. But at SPR Brew Crew, Beer Friend Brad, NB Long Tin, you know, unfortunately couldn't get the beers, but, you know, he's here hanging out. My good friend and beer swap partner, Orion321, jumped in. Beer's My Church. You know, just off the top of the list here, but you know, there's a lot.
So how do you usually do these Twitters? Everybody agrees at a certain time to get the same beers?
Yeah, you know, I just kind of I get the word out, and everybody goes out, gets the beers, you know, agrees on a time to get together, discuss the beers, taste them at the same time, and just give their input, you know, that kind of thing. It's nice, especially with, you know, it's hard to physically get in the same place with these people because they're spread all over the states, but you know, you spend an hour talking to them about different beers. It's interesting, you know, it's definitely fun.
All right, so Joey and Wayne, we're gonna ask a couple questions that people are Twittering some questions in now.
Yeah, I'm gonna see what's going on here.
Tim's gonna pull up one or two that seem to be pretty interesting, and so tell us a little bit about Cigar City. I know you guys were at Jimmy's number 43 last week for Craft Beer Week. And we got to try some of your real limited beers. What is that beer? We had the tiramisu beer. What is that?
It's an imperial sweet stout that's kind of brewed, obviously, to have some of the same flavor components as the tiramisu dessert. And that was actually brewed by Ben Romano, who's our pilot brewer. He works directly under Wayne, kind of the special projects guy. And that was one that we just test batched. And I think we had it at your place up there. It was myself, actually, that was up there for Craft Beer Week and had a great time. You had a really good turnout there.
Yeah, they said that was the only keg of the tiramisu in New York. Is that true?
That is correct, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Hey, and you guys know Tony from Ale Street News?
Yeah, I met you guys. I met you, Wayne, out in JABF. Did you guys recover yet?
I can't speak for Wayne.
But you guys did a great job with the booth you had there. You had one of the M spaces. Obviously, you know, wanted to make a splash out there.
Yeah, we're surprised by the response. It was huge.
I think everything that I get from you, people buy. I mean, we can hardly keep in the Hi-Li, the Maduro. Right now, we're drinking the Hi-Li here in the studio. And Tim, you got any feedback about the Hi-Li or any questions for these guys?
One of the biggest questions I think a lot of people have is around the you know, the naming conventions for your beers. Obviously, very heavily cigar influenced. Do you guys want to explain that a little bit? Or
yeah, well, Tampa, you know, Tampa's nickname is Cigar City, and so that's obviously where we got our name from. You know, just like New York's the Big Apple and Philadelphia's, you know, Brotherly Love. It's just one of the nicknames. And it tends to confuse people, too, because they'll see the logo and they'll say, oh, you brew and make cigars. It's just a nickname for Tampa. So saying Cigar City Brewing is just like saying Tampa Brewing. But I guess, fortunately, Tampa Bay Brewing Company was already taken, so I had to think one step further when I came up with the name. And then, you know, once you've decided, hey, you're going to go ahead and use that nickname for the city, you might as well incorporate some of the other things that we're known for locally. I think in some ways, you know, Florida and Tampa really specifically has done a poor job of sort of exporting their culture. I think most people think of Florida as just, hey, it's a place you go for beaches and there's a lot of old people there, but there's a lot of culture here. You know, Florida, the oldest city in the United States is in Florida. You know, there's been people coming to Florida since the 1500s, so there's more of a history and a legacy than really any other state in the country.
So we wanted to kind of share some of Florida's past with the rest of the world, and that's, you have this pulpit, you have this bottle of beer that someone's going to be holding in their hand, so it's a perfect opportunity to say, hey, here's our beer, but also, did you know this about our state or this about our city? So I wanted to embrace that, you know, from a very early point in developing the company.
So Joey, wait, so what is the oldest city in America?
Pardon me?
What's the oldest city in America?
St. Augustine.
Is it really?
It is, yes.
Didn't know that.
I've heard that once or twice. And then does Tampa and St. Pete's, do you have an annual pirate celebration?
We do. That's called Gasparilla, and it's named after Jose Gaspar, who's probably an apocryphal character. He's probably not a real person, but he's basically based on a lot of myths and fairy tales of other pirates. And that fest has been going since the early 1900s, thereabouts. Maybe a little bit after that, maybe the 1920s. I don't know the exact date it started, but I know it's been going for a very long time. And it's, you know, it's a huge, huge fest. I mean, there'll be 500,000 people lining, you know, Bayshore into downtown, and there's you know, people dressed as pirates, and they go around shooting off guns and cannons, and it's a big party.
How would you describe the brewing culture in Tampa these days?
I'd say ascendant. You know, it's definitely on the rise. There's a lot of breweries in the planning. The state in general, I think we probably had our best showing ever at GABF. As a state, we won 5 medals, and it may not seem like a lot when you have, you know, breweries like Pizza Port winning, you know, 5, you know, at one brewery. But when you consider that the entire state of Florida, if you add up all the craft breweries, we're brewing about 40,000 barrels. So as a state, it's pretty small. So so if you look at that kind of production and see that we got 5 medals, that's actually pretty good. We got a gold, and a bunch of other people got silvers, and Florida Beer Company got a bronze.
Yeah, congrats. So that was on your
I'm a big cheerleader for Florida beer, and I think we're better than we're not great, but we're better than we get credit for, I guess.
Sure.
There's another. I think there's a small craft brewery that I've tried from Florida, Saint Somewhere. Do you know those guys?
Right, Saint Somewhere. That's Bob Sylvester, who's real close to us. He never enters GABF, and I wish he would, because I think, you know, especially some of his Brett Belgian beers would do pretty well. But he's a one man operation. In fact, he ran his brewery literally while also working a full time job for the first almost four years that it's been open. He just finally quit his full time job and runs the brewery, but it's still a one man operation. But yeah, he does some really interesting things, and we've used his yeast strain in many of our beers, and Wayne can speak to that more fully, but you know, he was a big inspiration to me when I was trying to get the brewery open, because I saw this guy literally open his brewery, you know, with just sweat and a credit card.
All right. Hey, Tim, we're drinking the High Lie IPA right now. Let's see, is anyone on Twitter, do they have a question about the High Lie specifically?
Specifically around the hops. Is there
Tim,
one?
Say the handle too.
Sure. It's from Martin Bowling. He was wondering if which hop was, if there was one that was most dominant in the High Lie, or do you get a little taste of all of them? What's the hop profile like in this beer?
I'll let Wayne answer. To me, Simcoe is the most dominant, but that's really probably because I look for a tarnish, but
right.
I'll let Wayne answer.
Right.
The beer has a lot of different hop additions in it. And I like to blend hops to create more character and depth. It has Autumn, Amarillo, Cascade, Centennial, Columbus, and it has Simcoe. All the first 5 hops I mentioned are kettle additions, and then Simcoe is the hop that we use to dry off the beer with. So the Simcoe might give you some tropical fruit-like notes, and then the melange of citrus that you get is actually coming from a blend of all those other 5 hop varietals to create, you know, just a unique flavor profile.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. And here's another question. They're giving me notes, too.
Yeah, no,
from Beer Is My Church. That's a pretty good handle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do you know Beer Is My Church?
Yep.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you guys are all buddies?
yeah, virtually, you know.
Beer Is My Church says, any cigar beer pairing recommendations?
I tend to, you know, like the Maduro cigar, or the Maduro beer. I tend to like Maduro cigars. I smoke a lot of Arturo Fuente and Rocky Patel cigars.
although lately I haven't been able to smoke as much as I wanted, but I tend to like, you know, a medium to light-bodied cigar. Occasionally, Marshall Zukov's Imperial Stout with a real robust full-bodied cigar is a nice treat, but that's, you know, that I've got to have 2 or 3 hours to kill to do. You know, once you light up a cigar, you kind of got to stick with it for a while, and lately I haven't had as much downtime as I'd like to have, but we've actually got some lagers coming out, too, and you wouldn't typically think of lagers with cigars, but if you get a really mild cigar with like a Schwartz beer, and we're actually getting ready to make it should be coming out in November, a Schwartz beer called Ligero, another cigar term. Right. That'll be coming out in November, and a real mild-bodied cigar with like a Schwartz beer has always been a nice treat to me.
I see you have a food pairing suggested here on your labels, too, the devil crabs with the aioli.
Yeah, you know, any kind of spicy food, and Wayne's a hardcore foodie, so Wayne can really go into the food pairings with you, but anything that's got a little bit of a spice to it tends to work well with hoppy beers. I'm sure Wayne could give you 500 other food recommendations, but we only had so much space on the label.
Well, that's pretty neat. I mean, you guys really made a statement. How many barrels are you guys making right now?
How many barrels?
Yeah, I mean, roughly.
This year, Wayne was to be about 9,000 this year, right?
Well, yeah, somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 is where we're probably going to end up at. I just got finished with taxes for the month of September, and we did really well. We were right around 890 barrels of production for just the month of September, so it's looking like we'll probably be somewhere around 8,000 to 8,500.
Did you guys happen to enter the Alpha King contest out there in Denver?
Yeah, we did. We entered a beer that our lead brewer came up with. His name is Tim Ogden. It's called Tuckabaga Red Ale, and it's basically it's stuck in between a gap that starts at the bottom with American Amber Ale, and then at the top, Imperial Red Ale. So it's too big to be an American Amber, but it's not big enough to be an American Red Ale. Yeah, we did enter that beer.
The Alpha King's kind of a sideshow contest outside of the JABF, sponsored by, I think, Hop Union and some other hop producers. But it's basically, you know, hoppy beers, but they're looking for balance as well as just pure hops.
Yeah,
this year, Bagby from Pizza Pork slated this year. I think he got first and second or something like that.
Yeah, and he repeated from last year. What is it with that guy?
Does he actually make beer? I think he only enters competitions. But Paul from Blind Bat has a question for you about the Maduro.
Yeah, actually, it's really, really excellent. Very nice. I was just wondering if you were to, not that every beer needs to be in a specific classification, but what type of brown ale would you say to people this is?
You know, it's
cigar-friendly.
Cigar-friendly,
In my opinion, it's a more aggressive version of a Northern English brown ale.
Mm-hmm.
I got disappointed when I would drink other brown ales that were actually coming from England and they were referred to as nut brown ale.
Right.
I was always looking for the nut character, mm-hmm. the nuttiness, and I never really got it. So with ours, we use a combination of different toasted malts to be able to get this. It's like a roasted peanut sort of character in the finish of the product.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Tony, what do you think about nut brown and brown ales from England?
Yeah, it's true. I think it's true of you know, a lot of categories from England that kind of got a little bit dumbed down, like the IPA style virtually disappeared and was revived by Americans. Obviously, you have Newcastle Brown Ale, which is very, shall we say, drinkable. But the nut brown ales, you know, I guess Sam Smith's is still a decent example, but I really am tasting the nut in your beers. It's nice.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Well, guys, we're going to hold on. You're going to stay on the air with us, okay? We're going to take a short break. Give a shout out to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. We're back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, tonight with Tony Forter from Ale Street News and an esteemed panel. We got Joey and Wayne from Cigar City in Tampa, and we're doing some Twitter questions. So, Tim, Beseeker?
Well,
you're going to kill him. Say it again.
Beseeker. Yeah.
Tim, give us a couple questions from your Twitter friends.
Okay.
And so, FYI, we just did we had the Hi-Li IPA, and we had the Maduro Brown.
We're on to the Maduro right now.
Now we're on. We can go on to the Humidor if you want, or you can stick on with the Maduro.
Yeah, let's stick on with just a general question, cigar related. I'll go back and see who posted it. But the question was, do you have any plans in the future to do any partnerships with cigar manufacturers on a beer release, jointly together?
You know, we've thought about doing a few things, but nothing has really manifested yet. Obviously, it's kind of natural to sort of look in that direction. But, at this point, we don't have any hard plans to do anything. But it's definitely something, that's in the back pocket, something that I would like to do one day.
Yeah, okay. Just, I saw who posted that. It was at N Long Tin. Thanks.
All right. Next question, Tim.
Also, distribution-wise, do you guys right now just – I'm pretty sure you guys are only in Florida, Pennsylvania, New York. If there's any other states, please let us know. But in the future, what are your plans for expanding your distribution?
Right now, we're also in Alabama and Georgia.
Okay.
We've sort of had to do a 180 in sort of how we saw ourselves as a company. And so the old model in craft beer was you sell a little bit of beer in a lot of places, kind of send it around, but – The landscape has really changed a lot, so we've kind of have been able to look a little bit bigger than probably we had any right to for the age that we are. You're standing on the shoulders of giants, the Sierra Nevadas, the Inkersteen, the Anchors, the Dogfish Heads. These breweries have come before New Belgium, and they've shown distributors that these beers have a market and can be profitable. So you have access to market that you just literally didn't have even 5 years ago, much less 10 years ago. So our focus now is more to trying to kind of grow into a Southeast regional brewery. So we have a renewed focus on sort of populating the Southeast first. So we're looking at North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, to kind of complete that. We're not going to pull out of, obviously, Philadelphia, New York. They were big fans of ours, big supporters of ours in the beginning, and have helped us grow. So we're going to stay there. But the short term is the Southeast, and then fill up the East Coast. And it really just is a capacity issue, how much you can do. We also send a little beer to Denmark as well. And again, that's just a function of them asking us early and often and being patient. And, you develop a rapport with people over time, and it just got to be the point that I just, I felt like, well, God, we got to send them beer. They've been so cool. So,
yeah.
Don't forget about that little place just to the left of, New Jersey. Yeah.
I was going to say that. Thanks.
Tim, who asked that question?
Thanks, Tom Bedell.
Quick question for me. So you guys... I don't even know how this works. How do you guys ship beer? Do you have your own trucks, or does distributors come and pick up beer from you guys?
We don't have our own trucks. It depends on where it's going. In state, we're close enough that the distributors will just send a truck by, take the beer up, take it back to their warehouse. The further away you get, you either have to arrange shipping. When we ship to New York and Philly, it's a little more difficult because we need to ship refrigerated. We don't pasteurize anything, so the beer has to be kept cold. So basically, we just wait until, maybe there's a produce truck that's coming in so they can arrange a shipment that then is going out, heading north. And we just work with our distributors up there to get a carrier that's willing to ship it up. But we don't have our own trucks now.
So you don't have the silver bullet train that just takes your beer wherever people want it. No. You don't think that's funny, do you?
In your dreams, Jimmy.
I have no idea how this works. I mean, for real, you think about how do you get your beer to you?
Yeah.
It's like, I have no idea how I get beer from anywhere. I mean, you've got beer coming from Europe and these kegs going back and forth. It's amazing. I mean, whoever's doing this, it's a lot more than just making beer.
I'm driving it too.
It are you driving your truck?
Yeah. I got a little Chevy HHR. So I'm
I think, as you alluded to before, the landscape changing, we're seeing the cost of transportation are getting so large now that you know, two major breweries are looking at building on the East Coast, Sierra Nevada and New Belgium.
Yeah. They, you know, and the larger manufacturers, they have a built-in advantage because they can afford, you know, flash pasteurizers, things like that. You know, they're entry-level, almost $200,000. But if you can flash pasteurize your beer, then you can ship it warm. And that's a huge shipping difference. You know, the cost to ship...
Isn't that kind of a dirty word in craft beer, though, pasteurization?
What, pardon me?
Isn't that kind of a dirty word in craft beer, pasteurization?
You know, I mean, I personally, I don't... We don't pasteurize our beer, but personally... You know, from everything, from the research that I've done, it pretty much just, it kind of slightly ages the beer, but then it holds it right there. And the industry, they sort of say it ages at about 2 weeks, which is not, it's almost nothing if you're taking a very fresh beer. And then it holds it there. Pretty much all of the larger, even craft breweries, pasteurize, to my knowledge. Not I'm guessing. I know that there's definitely a few that don't. I believe Bell's doesn't. I believe Sierra Nevada doesn't. But a lot of the larger ones do. And you know, they say you can't taste the difference other than that there's a little bit of aging. You know, what it does do, and this isn't even really debatable, it's proof, is it does add a lot more stability. You know, most of the beers that you're getting from Europe, those beers have been pasteurized just because, you know, that's a long, slow boat ride, you know, and you can store those kegs warm, and that lowers your shipping costs.
I guess it's just a bit of a stigma, like people used to look down on cans, and now craft brewers love them.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I honestly would rather have an unpasteurized beer just because it is fundamentally unfooled around with. And if it's in your local market, you know, from your local brew pub, it's probably not pasteurized just because there's such a cost associated with pasteurization.
Do you guys in Tampa, do you guys have certain beers that you're just making for like do you actually sell beers at the brewery or do you sell beers to your local bars in Tampa?
There's a lot of beers that we sell. Well, we sell just to a distributor, but there's a lot of beers that we sell just for the Tampa market. Most of our lagers right now are just for the Tampa market. Our English Dark Mild Elector is just for the Tampa market. Right now, we have a white ale called Florida Cracker White Ale, and that's really just, it's starting to kind of seep out of the Tampa area, but most of these beers were really developed just for the Tampa market.
Tim, you got any more questions?
Yeah,
your buddies?
Definitely. I'd love to give a little bit of a shout out to a Florida representative here at Cigar Girl FL. She was wondering what are the inspirations for the one-off brews available in the tasting room, and if there's any plans to make any of those regular, beer releases.
You know, it kind of went back to the very beginning. Wayne and I, you know, we decided on two beers to do with Coors. And then the goal was to not say, you know, most breweries, it's like, okay, here's our pale ale, here's our IPA, here's our amber, here's our stout, you know, here's our wheat beer, and then that's what we're going to make. We wanted to make two beers and then make anything else we wanted to and just sort of let the consumer dictate the beers that sort of rose to the top and became regular offerings. And that's what we did. We just made a bunch of different beers, and we still continue to do that. And things that create more buzz, that more people ask for. The Tiramisu Stout is a good example. People have been asking us to make that again.
Yeah, I got a couple tweets about that as well.
Yeah, instead of dictating, well, you're going to drink these beers because these are the beers that we want to make, we just basically make everything, and then, you know, some of the beers never get made again. They don't have that good of a response, or there might be some people
Joe, hold on a second.
Just not vocal enough and asking for them again. So,
Joe, Tim, just send out to your followers. Ask them where they tasted the tiramisu.
Yeah,
I'm interested. Because you guys probably... How many markets did you send that beer to?
Well, tiramisu? Somebody mentioned that. Did you guys have that at GABF?
No, we didn't send tiramisu to GABF, no.
Okay. Someone had tasted it, I believe, in New York City.
We had it at Jimmy's number 43 about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, we did. Jimmy's did have it. They had it when I was there.
They want more of it. also, just one more question, if you don't mind, Jimmy, real quick, from at A Winner. He was wondering how many of the Maduro Brown is one of your base beers, right? How many of the other beers were based off of that recipe, whether it be grain bill or you know, yeast or hops?
How many other beers are based off Maduro as far as were built on it, or as far as...
Yeah, do you have...
Well, Oatmeal Raisin Cookie is, Cubano Espresso is, but those are the only two regular ones. Now, we've done a lot of other ones based on it, but we've also done a lot of Brown Ales that were just different recipes, and I'll let Wayne talk about this, but we have one coming up for Christmas, a beer that we piloted. We got along when we were first opening, called Sugar Plum Brown Ale, but it's a completely different beer, and I think you kind of run into that a lot. Like, if we make a brown ale, people assume it's just Maduro, but we've actually made a few different brown ales. I'll let Wayne talk about Sugar Plum Brown Ale.
Our Sugar Plum Brown Ale is it's a brown ale, but we go really, really heavy on Munich malt to try to get more malt character. And then we use got a plethora of spices. We use rosehips, hibiscus, roasted chicory, roasted carob. It has cinnamon in it. It has dark plum in it. I can't remember all of them. It has slight hints of nutmeg. It's just when you bring it to your nose and you smell it, to me, it reminds me of Christmas, maybe cooking dessert in the kitchen. And then the actual ale is, it's got this big malt backbone to it, but then you get the acidic notes from the rose hips and the hibiscus, and then this all these different spices start interjecting, but none of them come over the top. And then the rose hips and the hibiscus color the beer. So, like, if you were to hold it up and we weren't putting those spices into the beer, it would look like a normal brown ale. But hibiscus and rose hips tend to add a deeper red color. So it's like this really, really deep, intense red color when you hold it up to the light.
So we can substitute this for grandma's fruitcake, I guess, at Christmas.
Yeah. Sounds really
yeah.
nice.
Right. Yeah.
And one more thing, Wayne, you're on Seon. Humidor series. I mean, this is an awesome. I've had several of the Humidor series, the Good Gourd, the IPA. Just tell us about how that came about, because it's pretty awesome.
The Humidor series? The Humidor series came about, actually, it predates me. Joey used to go to homebrew club meetings of Tampa Bay Beers, is the name of the club. And one of their members actually decided that he smoked cigars, so he decided he was going to take some of the inserts for the cigars, which are Spanish cedar, and put some into his beer and see what it would do. And he brought some of that beer to one of their monthly tastings or get-togethers, and Joey tasted the beer and he liked it so much. He asked this gentleman if he could take his idea, and the guy said, "Yeah, sure." And so that was like one of the things that led us to start experimentation with it and to try to determine exactly which beers it would work best in. And so far it's worked, it works really well in our American IPA, which is High Ali, and it also works incredibly well in our Imperial Stout. Basically, if you're going to drink the High Ali, you could go with like a lighter cigar, but you could put any cigar you want to, doesn't matter how heavy, in front of the Humidor Imperial Stout, because it's got the Spanish cedar in it, and it's just full-bodied, really dark, just rushing at you, going to knock you down at 150 miles an hour Imperial Stout that will stand up to any cigar you want to put in front of it.
Joey, what's the name of the guy that came up with the cedar, Humidor cedar technique?
Joey, I forgot his name.
You don't remember his name?
His name is Mike Fouch.
Mike Fouch. Does he get beer for life from Cigar City?
Pardon?
Does he get beer for life from Cigar City?
Anytime Mike's here, if I'm here, yes, I will buy his beer.
Mike Fouch.
He lives local to me. I've known him for a while. Anytime Mike wants a beer, you can have one.
That's awesome.
So the Humidor series is all based on the Spanish cedar is endemic to
Yeah, it came out of home brewing, and that's what I liked about it. And one really cool thing is the first time we ever went to GABF, and it was a cool experience for us. We won a gold medal with that beer, and then we won a silver the following year. But what was really cool to me is we actually had a guy come in who was a home brewer and asked us could he have some of the Spanish cedar spirals because he wanted to make a beer. To enter into the American Homebrewers Association
contest, and he took that back. I think he was from Chicago. He took it back, brewed an IPA, different recipe than ours, but brewed an IPA, aged it on, and he won a gold medal. So it was really cool to kind of see it go back to home brewing again.
That's cool. Do you have to use fresh spirals every time you brew it, or?
We do, yeah. We use fresh spirals every time.
All right. Hey, we're going to wrap it up. Just one more. Tim, give a shout-out to other your Twitter followers and who've been on.
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for participating. This was really awesome. Just keep it up. You know, keep chatting about beer online on Twitter, and let's get together to sit down and taste beers. You know, right. Appreciate.
Yeah, and give us a who else was on there? List off the handles.
I definitely like to thank at Beers My Church, at A Winner for participating, Cigar Girl Florida, at Hungus BT Brew. At Sterling Hotel, which is my local beer bar in New Jersey, one of the best ones around.
What town?
It's actually in Sterling, New Jersey. Yeah, it's a really good beer bar. New Jersey has a couple that are really excellent. There should be more, hopefully coming soon, you know, as well as breweries. So, yeah.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Listen, Joey and Wayne, thanks for coming on. We're definitely going to talk to you guys again. Tony, Ale Street News, any special events coming up or special trips?
Yeah, we are taking a group over to the Mondial de la Bière Festival in Strasbourg, France. Actually, I'll be there ahead of time running the American Pavilion there with 50 beers from 17 different breweries in the U.S. I think our container just arrived, as a matter of fact. And so it was a little challenge shipping over there because these are not pasteurized, most of these beers. But we haven't had a problem. This is the third year. And then we're going to have a group join us there, beer lovers. We're going to take them down to Italy.
Paul, any places on Long Island where I can try your Blind Bat beer?
The Cortland and Bayshore, a great little beer bar. Sapsuckers, I mentioned earlier, in Huntington. I'm sometimes at Big Z on Jericho Turnpike, which is a great beer store. Shoreline Beverage, also in Huntington. And I think I mentioned earlier, Dave's Cold Beer and Soda in Bellport.
All right, local craft beer. And Tim, anything going on with your Twitter or a private tap that we should know about?
Private Tap, it's a startup that I'm involved in. And it's basically based around the idea of local. Drinking beer is really all about experiencing it with other people, you know, together, you know, in experiences. So bringing that local, but also not keeping that geographic specific. So, you know,
So privatetap.com.
Yep, privatetap.com.
For more about Tim. And then we're supporting Brooklyn Pour by Village Voice October 15th in Brooklyn. Check it out. It's going to be really great. If you can buy tickets, we have a discount code, Voice Street. Check out Voice Street is your discount code for Brooklyn Pour. Pig Island goes to Pig Mountain. We're producing a Pig Mountain up in the Catskills on Saturday, October 15th. That's a cool thing. We'll have Six Point and some New York State breweries up there. Tomorrow, the Blind Tiger will have their great Pumpkin Fest. Check that out Wednesday at 3 p.m. And thanks again. We're Beer Sessions Radio here on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. And thanks to everybody on the show tonight, Tony, Paul, Tim, Wayne, and Joey, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
More to the point, roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind. And sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The Heritage Meat Shop has just opened in the Essex Street Market. Open from 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 6 on Sundays, the Heritage Meat Shop supports independent family farms and animal welfare approved and certified humane raising standards. Most importantly, they offer a wide variety of heritage breeds. So stop by, get a sandwich, try the charcuterie, the Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. 14 family farms and over 50 restaurants have committed to participation in No Goat Left Behind, a new program developed by Heritage Foods USA, a meat distribution company dedicated to preserving endangered breeds. Without an end market, the majority of male dairy goats are sold into the commodity market or killed at birth. Dairy farmers are always struggling with feed prices, milk prices, and weather. Goats usually have twins or triplets, and for every female who will become a milker, there is a male buckling who will become a financial drain. It makes no sense that these males are sold into the commodity market or put to death when the United States imports almost 50% of its annual goat supply. Home consumers interested in participating can order goats through heritagefoodsusa.com. They will receive goats via FedEx, and home delivery is available for New York City customers. In addition to the goat, these packages will also include recipes and a DVD featuring interviews with the farmers, processors, and chefs demonstrating how to break down and cook goat. Again, for more information on No Goat Left Behind, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com or call Aaron Fairbanks at 718-389-0985.